The Medical Alley podcast is brought to you by MentorMate. For over 20 years, the healthcare industry's largest companies have trusted MentorMate to guide their vision while designing and developing innovative digital products. Whether you're powering a medical device, overhauling your back-end architecture, or reimagining your patient experience, MentorMate can help. The global team takes a personalized and in-depth approach to deliver secure solutions in all sectors of healthcare. With deep expertise in design, development, cloud, and software support, MentorMate helps healthcare clients administer state-of-the-art care through technology. Trusted guidance, global expertise, secure integration. MentorMate delivers digital transformation at scale. Learn more at MentorMate.com.
Hello, good day everyone, and welcome to today's webinar in partnership with Medical Alley. I'm David McClintock from EcoVadis, and thanks to Medical Alley for hosting and coordinating this. We are addressing generating impact through sustainable procurement, ESG, and the medical and pharma supply chain. We're going to get started, I think, even though we have a few more people filling in, but thanks again to our hosts. So without further ado, again, I'll introduce myself, David McClintock, Marketing Director at EcoVadis. EcoVadis provides sustainability ratings for global supply chains. And we're really lucky today to be joined by a couple of very esteemed panelists. First, let me introduce Mindy Agnew. She's the Senior Manager of Global Supplier Sustainability at Baxter. She joined Baxter in April, so fairly recently, with a very deep corporate public sector sustainability experience. In her role there, she collaborates with regional leaders and category managers to advance their sustainable supplier program. She's responsible for integrating the supplier sustainability requirements and approaches into Baxter's purchasing processes and system. And she focuses on establishing governance for supplier sustainability and coordinating with all the necessary departments, procurement, EHS, quality, and other teams to build a foundation that allows best practices and can also meet customer requirements. And thank you for joining. And today we also have Joanne Sali, a senior consultant of corporate and supply chain sustainability at ERM. And Joanne is a senior consultant with ERM's sustainability strategy and disclosure group. She has over 20 years experience in operations management, supply chain strategy development and implementation, and in supplier relationship and maturity. So she leads the value chain projects, including supplier engagement, sustainable procurement programs, and supply chain due diligence. So she's right spot on our topic today as she develops strategy and solutions in manufacturing, technology, packaging, mining, across many industries. So thank you both for joining us today. And so I'll just start with some opening remarks and then we'll get right to the panel discussions. So I think for all of you joining today, you know that ESG is on the mind of and on the business agenda. And it means increasing levels of not just transparency and reporting, but also that demanding for action from all of your stakeholders, whether they're, you know, your business, your own business operational needs and your vision, your purpose, your corporate purpose is driving that, or if it's investor demand, perhaps customer demand, or a changing regulatory landscape. Many of these things are driving companies to address sustainable supply chain because those investors and stakeholders all know that as much as 70 to 90% of a company's ESG impact comes from its supply chain. And life sciences is at the higher end of that range probably. So, and pharma and life sciences. So we need to really address the supply chain and make a really sincere, huge impact. And while many of them have been addressing it with compliance programs, I think it's maybe coming up short on the reality. I just saw an article published recently in The Conversation that showed that the pharma industry emits 48.55 tons of CO2 per million of revenue, and it's about 55% more than the automotive sector, which was at 31.4 million tons of CO2 per million the same year. So it's kind of baffling for me to believe, but I think there is a big impact. So we all know that. The question is why and how can we address it? Another article I saw from McKinsey about pharma supply chains can become more resilient was saying that end-to-end transparency, lack of visibility in the business practices of suppliers can be a significant risk. And so I think that's no mystery. So I think, with over, I think there's probably over a dozen of Medical Alley and of six of the founding members who are using ratings from EcoVadis to propagate through their supply chain and achieve this. There's a clear mandate and will by companies to do this. So let's get to our panel questions. And the first one, I think we'd like to explore what were the drivers? What was the catalyst for building out your sustainable procurement program? And maybe Mindy, we can start with you. You're new there at Baxter, but what are some of the drivers that are pushing your company to get deeper into this?
First of all, thank you for having me on the panel today. I'm really excited to be participating. And I think this is a really good question. For many of the folks probably dialed in today, and David, you know this, we have your typical corporate drivers, right? We've got investors, risk mitigation. We may have processes in place, for example, within our industry that are stellar product quality and audit processes, but some are challenged with the outcomes of some of our sustainability challenges that may or may not be included in the processes. So outside of the investor and support that we get, I think it's really important to realize and identify and act quickly on implementation strategies to cover a lot of the sustainability risks. So, but the other key driver outside of the typical things that we're aware of for our organization has also been equally kind of the social aspect of sustainability. We have really pushed and taken a lot of action in drawing in more toward our diversity outreach for diverse suppliers, toward our community outreach, toward community partners, and really have that as an equal driver in a lot of the actions that we're working on today. So, in our minds, that diversity aspect is part of our sustainability umbrella.
Okay, great. Thank you. And now, Joanna, you've got maybe a broader view of your client, across your client base. You've seen many, many companies tackling this. What is the thing driving them? And after this, we'll get to challenges, but what is the thing that you see driving your customers to sustainable supply chain in the pharma space?
Sure. And also, I'd like to thank you for having me be a part of this conversation. We really do see sort of a broad range of drivers and clients coming to us with questions kind of across the spectrum. I'd sort of bucket them into four different things that we see the most. One driver is customer expectation. So this is someone that sits somewhere in the value chain that says, oh, someone that buys from us that's really important to us has mandated some minimum requirement and we're not meeting it. We need help getting there. So that is often where we get involved. So that's probably the single biggest driver that we see across industries. But we also have clients come to us who say, we've done a risk assessment. We've identified that sustainability within our supply chain or our value chain is an area of risk that we've identified and we need to get our arms around it. A third, and we've seen this a few times come through, is finance opportunities. We've had some cases where a large company had an opportunity for a significant capital investment that the interest rate was going to be based on a sustainability rating. In this particular example, it was an EcoVadis score. So if they maintained or improved their EcoVadis score over a period of 3 years, it saved them, I think it was 0.25% on their interest, which for a large capital loan, that is significant to the company's overall budget. So that was an interesting one. And we're starting to see some different examples of that. And then the last one that we see that I think is really important and probably makes me the happiest is the reputational driver. The clients that come to us and say, this is important, it matters in the world, and there's no one particular force driving it. It's just our reputation. We want to be seen as a leader, and we know that this is table stakes. So we need to raise the bar for ourselves.
Great. Yeah, that's great points there. And the upstream and downstream aspect where, you know, I failed to mention at the beginning that ERM, CVS is doing, you know, consultative work. They're a certified partner of EcoVadis. They help companies improve their rating and understand, you know, their gaps and how they can do better. So this is a great perspective to see that if you in the audience are, you know, supplying a larger company, those customer demands may not just be coming from the consumers at the end, but from your customers saying, look, you know, you need to be sustainable. And you might also be asked to do a risk mapping and further engage your supplier. So it's kind of full up and down the chain. So in terms of challenges, let's get to some of those. Like maybe Mindy, you could talk about some of the things that were tried that didn't work, or just difficult parts of trying to get supply chain sustainability started and going, how to connect all the dots. Tell us what your perspective is on that.
I will say, and with some of our previous conversations, I've said this. If you are a practitioner in this field, you obviously are passionate. Some of us have changed careers to do this. So there is no lack of energy or tenacity. But I think some of the biggest challenges that I've experienced in every role in this capacity has been, you know, typical glossy-eyed sustainability now is more of our common nomenclature, but it's overwhelming to people. So I would say misperceptions, misunderstandings, both on with our internal staff, stakeholders, and external suppliers is a challenge, as well as the perception is this is a big task. You know, I'm already busy. This is going to take a lot of time. So between the low awareness and kind of the time perception and challenge is just kind of like an initial obstacle. But really, I don't see it as an obstacle. I see it as an opportunity. And so we've developed approaches, and there's a little bit of patience. There's a balance between communicating the urgency of what we need to do, but also not get overwhelmed and understand that, you know, it will take time to educate. But, you know, these are the things we're going to do, and we're going to be a little bit pushy and tenacious.
Yeah. And that's, I guess, the tension between the urgency and the business relationship. So, you know, you're sitting not necessarily in the relationship owner seat, procurement is sitting in that seat, and you're adjacent to that. And so finding the right balance, I guess, between those two. So Joanne, in your perspective, I think you work with both companies that are both, like we were saying, upstream, downstream. They're using EcoVadis to report to their customers, but they may also be receiving some of those scorecards from their own suppliers. You know, what challenges were there maybe either before those scorecards existed or as they deploy the program to new categories? What are you seeing there?
Sure. So I think that there are a couple of different perspectives because of where we are working with our clients upstream or downstream. So yes, when it's a case where it's a customer or a series of customers coming to a particular client and asking for something like an EcoVadis score or some sort of other bespoke assessment that they're asking for, really what we see is trying to make that business case, that if you get some of this supplier assessment information, some of this sustainability data collection sort of across the board, if you have it, then it's not a scramble that takes resources, time and hours, et cetera, to put all the pieces together to provide that submission back to a customer that's asking for it. Sort of a, if you get your ducks in a row, you've got your ducks in a row for everyone who asks about your ducks, right? So that's kind of the business case that we make is if you do it right, then you've got it and you've always got it. And that helps spread that cost of resources to all of those customers. So that's sort of one business case that we look at. When we turn it the other direction downstream, all of the challenges that that Mindy mentioned are absolutely true. Striking the right balance between we have this requirement of you going forward, but we want to educate you on the information we need and why it's important. We want to be your partner in developing the programs that you may not already have in place to collect data that you can share back to us. And oh, by the way, you can share it to all of your other customers as well. So sort of leveraging that same business case. But then also being tenacious and saying, we're not going to stop asking for this. This pressure is not going to go away. It's not going to go away on us. And so it's not going to go away on you. So we've all got to work together and we're going to keep asking. So maybe we'll give you a pass this year. You can only provide answers to some of the questions. You can only attend some of the meetings we invite you to, but it's not going to go away. So it's really important to an ongoing business partnership that you participate as well. And that can be a really delicate balance to strike depending on leverage you have in that buying relationship. And there are a lot of other factors that can be involved. So certainly striking that balance and knowing where you've got the power in that relationship can be a really crucial point to understand about your value chain going in.
Great. Thank you. So yeah, we see that then the misperceptions, the perceived as an obstacle, misunderstandings maybe as well are all conspiring to make it difficult to engage suppliers at scale, you know, trying to get them to, you know, understand more, you know, not only why it's important, but that if they follow a process, there may actually be some, you know, benefits at the end of the road. And especially if they take a certain approach where they could leverage their results. We're getting into approaches now, right? So maybe we can dig deeper on this and understand, you know, these challenges are multiple. You have multiple categories to deal with. You have a lot of indirect categories, I believe, in pharma. Many industries that we work with might have specific programs for certain commodities that they go very deep and they understand how to keep those more sustainable. They know what to monitor, but all the peripheral categories that are associated to it, you know, how do you, you know, solve this, all of these challenges with such a wide variety of different categories that suppliers in, different sizes of suppliers, different locations around the world, you know, what approaches are working? Maybe first we'll start with you, Mindy, on the you know, the requesting side, the buyers trying to engage their value chain that with this, you know, wide variety of landscape in terms of business and the business demands, you know, trying to balance those two things. You know, how do you make this valuable for suppliers? How do you transform sustainability from a burden into something that they see, you know, as a positive, and then that's maybe a communication challenge. And then what are the logistics? What are the nuts and bolts of how you engage those suppliers and get them, you know, rolled out? Do you choose a particular category strategy? How do you get the buyers trained? What are all the approaches that you're using to get this done to overcome those challenges?
David, I don't think I have enough time to answer that question.
Yeah, maybe the highlights. We'll start with the highlights.
But you really hit on some really key challenges. But again, I'm going to flip it and say they're opportunities. So, you know, we are the purveyors, the implementers of the title that Joanne also, it's not if, it's when. And I think one of the key things is relationship management with everyone, including internal staff, and education, simple, succinct. and so, you know, one of the things that we've done is we've chosen wisely so far with some of our partners and the tools that we use in our toolbox. And EcoVadis is one of those tools, and we have a good collaboration established. And so the process that I've been working on with communication and resources, both internally, which is just as important as external. So how do we get to these suppliers? One of the best ways to do that, and it could be a category manager, or it could be one of our quality audit staff. Whoever our suppliers have established relationship with really, really helps. Yes, we have some influence because, you know, we're the requester, but the messaging more on the realistic, positive resource aspect of using a tool like EcoVadis has been successful so far. It's not the demand of you must have this scorecard to keep our business. It's more along the lines of you know, Baxter has invested in a partner that is offering you some resources that are really going to be helpful no matter where you are in your sustainability or your ESG process. Here are some of those tools. More frequent, especially on a global scale, depending on what region of the world, more frequent dynamic educational supplier outreach. So what we've experienced that has been really helpful is we've partnered with our EcoVadis team, and we have conducted globally in multiple languages, free, we have to emphasize free webinars, because it seems that a lot of times when you're offering this kind of valuable resource, a lot of our suppliers think, you know, what's the cost to this? You know, what do I have to pay to attend this webinar? So those are some of the successful strategies that we've been able to use. And it gives us an opportunity to collect the intelligence that we're going to need to address, you know, a lot of the complex issues with, you know, several thousand suppliers under multiple different categories that, you know, when you really drill down deep into it can get very detailed. But so far, so good, you know, and we've had a lot of success with that. And being able to work with a global partner in multiple languages has also been beneficial.
Yeah, I forgot about that aspect, that not just the location, but the language. And that we got 14 languages in the platform today, and a support team speaks even more. But that's maybe an unexpected challenge once you get into it. So that's great to hear. You're kind of going beyond just the, you know, you just have to have the scorecard, but, you know, how are you using the tools to advance your journey in the sustainability area? And that's really what we're all about, is trying to engage in this improvement journey, because, you know, long-term, that's a much more enduring sort of outcome, right? If somebody's improving their score over time, it's way more motivating than just, oh, did I comply every year or not? This kind of binary, you know, kind of mentality that we're coming out of a risk management mentality into an improvement mentality, right? So that's great to hear. And in that thing, can I ask you a specific question? And if you don't know the answer, it's fine. But in terms of like the procurement processes, like, you know, the when you do tenders, or when you're selecting, sourcing a new supplier, or in the sort of supplier relationship, some management software, sometimes there are scorecards that the procurement team are using. Are the EcoVadis ratings included in those sorts of procurement processes? Have you gotten far enough in your tenure there at Baxter to know how they're used?
Yes, and since April, it's all done. No. Actually, you know, we are revisiting our whole ESG strategy, right? And that's part of it. It's part of saying, what are the platforms that we are using that our suppliers access? What can we integrate where we can put in front of them? Here is your score. Is it required right now? No, but some of the ideas that we're working on integrating is a supplier hub for sustainability, integrating some of the other platforms, especially with Indirect, that they use and see every day, and getting that EcoVadis scorecard up there when they flash open that application and making it easier to access. I think once those are in place, it will be a lot easier for me to say, okay, you know, when in your supplier selection, is it required right now? No, but is the access to the information, are we working on making it available? Yes.
Okay, so visibility is the first strategic pillar, and once you can get that visible, then you can work on the internal and external negotiations to get it worked into the decision criteria.
Right, you know, and I feel, again, I'm going to revert back to that communication and outreach that has to be established pretty well, so there's that level of understanding, and it has to be dynamic and consistent.
Thank you. So Joanne, maybe again, that if you have both perspectives, great, but I would love to hear, you know, how some of the companies you're working with are leveraging the rating, you know, to basically integrate into the relationship, whether it's being demanded by the customer, meaning like they know they need a certain score to do well in an RFP, or that, you know, it's building their reputation, so they're pushing that score and maybe their medal back out to their customers. Maybe how is the approach kind of working on your end?
Sure. So I think the approach really varies depending on the maturity of the company that's come to us to ask for support. If they're already a pretty mature company with regard to sustainability, and they just want to shore up their EcoVadis score, maybe push it a little higher, sort of understand operationally how they integrate the stuff they need to do, what are the programs that need to be fully operational to get full scoring from EcoVadis. These are companies that tend to already be in the silver range, and they're really struggling with how they push higher. How do they get to gold? How do they get to platinum? And those tend to require some sort of bigger programmatic changes. So it really depends on their maturity. A lot of the work that I do with my team with regard to value chains is often with those less mature companies that have come in and said, oh, we've been asked to do this and we don't even know where to start. Or a customer asked us to submit. We did. We really didn't know what we were doing. And we got a 32. But now a really important customer is saying, we've got to be at a 45 in a year. How do we do that? And dig in a little bit. So one of the things that we do sort of regardless of a particular client's maturity is start with their most recent EcoVadis submission, if one's been done, and do sort of a pretty straightforward gap analysis. What are the points that you're missing and why? Is it that you just didn't understand the question that was being asked for the kind of evidence that you could provide to satisfy that requirement from EcoVadis? Maybe you've already got the systems in place. You're just not reporting it back in a way that's getting you full credit. So let's look for those opportunities. We sort of think of those as low-hanging fruit. What are the easy wins, right? That stuff you can correct pretty easily, pretty quickly. The bigger stuff, the programmatic stuff, we really learn where we need to start. And we find that many, particularly those less mature clients, the sustainable procurement areas where they need the most help. And so that's where we're going to do a lot of the stuff that Mindy talked about. We're going to try to leverage what are the systems that are in place in your procurement programming. Do you already do some sort of annual survey, some sort of self-assessment with your supply base, or at least your tier one supply base? Are you checking in with those folks once a year to make sure that they don't have child labor, they're paying overtime, nobody's being killed on the job, that there are corrections in place for that, that things around capacity that are related to more traditional supply chain things like price and delivery, utilizing that tool that you have in place to start asking some ESG questions in that annual survey. To Mindy's point, using that procurement relationship, if there is a buyer dedicated to a particular category or some sort of strategic group of suppliers, making sure that those folks that the suppliers are already familiar with, have already had contact with, that that's where the messaging is originating, because that trust factor is huge. And then sort of stepping back from that, making sure that the clients that we work with understand that patience is necessary, that a good sustainable procurement program is going to take several years to get off the ground and fully implemented. And that's got to start with sort of marshaling your troops internally, making sure the messaging is clear, and then spreading that out in a way that really makes sense. Do you have a good system in place to identify who your most critical suppliers are? And you might be surprised to learn that we work with a lot of clients who don't have a system in place to do that. So just getting some of those basics established, understanding sort of a transparency of the value chain, understanding where the contracts lie. If you're partnering with a particular corporate supplier, but they've got a bunch of contract manufacturers, where does any sort of responsibility for action on ESG issues lie? Who's responsible, and how is that party going to be held accountable? So understanding all of those things and then using the resources you've already got in place is really a key to getting a program off the ground. And that is true sort of regardless of maturity. You've got to start with what you've got. But I think the really important key thing is you've got to start, right? Even if you only work with one supplier, next year you're going to have more answers than you do right now because of that one supplier relationship or that one customer relationship. The other thing that I think can be a really key relationship builder is if you've got folks upstream, downstream that are aspirational, the big companies that have a reputation for doing good sustainability work. If you're just getting started or you're sort of in the early years, partnering with them, making a smart connection can allow you access to additional resources and tools. Maybe they're doing more with EcoVadis and they can get you involved more. They can tell you more about training opportunities and learning opportunities. Maybe they can share and model for you what they've done. There are some really interesting opportunities there that I think can have a broader impact in industries, in pharma for sure, but in a lot of other industries too, where any one company might not have leverage. But if a group of companies work together in a partnership, they have a lot more leverage to the supply base. And so that can have a broader impact. So those are all things that I think companies should look for. And that's true regardless of maturity.
Excellent. Yeah. So I think I replay a bit of that you know, the big message here, and maybe people don't know a lot about how EcoVadis works, and we can explain a little bit of that. But so EcoVadis does the assessment of all four themes, 21 criteria and four themes across sustainability, including, you know, environment, which is, you know, covers carbon, you know, but as well as water and biodiversity and all those topics, labor and human rights, you know, how you're managing the social aspect, ethics, anti-corruption, but and also sustainable procurement is one of the pillars. So the point is you have to start, and it's not about your score, your first score, your score today. It's about your trajectory, right? So the approach is more that enter the journey and it makes it less intimidating. You know, it's almost kind of like, don't worry about your first score because it's the first step in a journey, right? So you're always going to be at step one, no matter what. And if you do great on the first assessment, fantastic. But if you don't, the next step is how do you get the feedback, right? So the approach has to include not just a baseline, but the feedback on where were the gaps, right? Where were the improvement areas? And that's what you were talking about, the corrections. So to get to the corrections, you got to know where the gaps were. And I think that's what you're talking about there, Joanne, is that when you have, you know, a portfolio of suppliers, they've all responded to the survey, what you need is the, right, the intelligence, the takeaways, which is you need that data analyzed to understand where they are relative to where they should be, what things are material for their particular category or business activity. And then you can develop a scorecard that has those strengths and improvement areas. And on the improvement areas, let's take the most critical ones and turn them into corrective action plans. So I think when you're talking about the corrections, that's a really important aspect to the approach, is that that's what drives that improvement journey, right? So just you need to, you know, if you've got this tool, if you've got this approach where let's baseline performance, you know, let's just have a starting point, and then it's about your trajectory from there. Yes, it's a commitment to be engaged, but you know, when you have the feedback, it's not so daunting, right? It's not so overwhelming. If they can be prioritized, and you're not going to do everything at once, you're not going to be worried about everything at once. Let's get some guidance and some expertise coming back in that scorecard and getting support from companies like from Joanne, it's at ARM. Let's prioritize and pick two things that we're going to improve, and then we're going to get reassessed. Our score is going to go up in that theme or those themes, and then we're going to work on the next things on the list for the next year. So I really appreciate that that feedback. And I think it's aligned really well, Mindy, with what you were saying also about that. So, you know, you want to communicate it across the team. They can communicate those wins, right? So as soon as you've got a trajectory, you've got something positive to talk about internally with your own team, both on the procurement side, but also for the suppliers. They got some measurable progress. And that I think is going to drive further engagement to say, well, that was a win. Let's do it again, or let's do even better next time. So we're kind of trying to really turn this around into a positive, you know, race to the top. And it's hard to do. Like you said, it takes time and you got to have patience. So, you know, I wonder what one thing we maybe skip past in terms of the drivers is, you know, the desire to get to net zero. The corporate sustainability commitments, you know, to eradicate slavery from the supply chain. Are there pressures coming down that are coming out now in the needs for the sustainable supply chain program that are coming from those commitments? I wonder, maybe Joanne, we'll start with you and see from, you know, your customer base. you're working with companies that are large enough to be kind of visible enough to be expected to make some of these commitments. And are you seeing more of that? And are you seeing also that that's cascading down into requirements for how you integrate with your suppliers?
Yes, for sure. We see that. Although I will say, I think that a lot of the labor relations and the human rights issues, certainly with the increased focus on DE&I matters over the last couple of years, that's really sort of, we've seen all boats rise in that regard. And so most of the emphasis we're seeing now, most of the drivers do relate back to carbon emissions. And so what are you doing to collect the data, report the data? Are you making commitments? I've got a couple of clients right now that their objective is to get all of their tier one suppliers or all of their most critical suppliers signed up to science-based targets or to have made some sort of 100% renewable energy or net zero commitment. But that really requires sort of understanding what the steps are for alignment. So for example, with science-based targets initiative, that requires data collection for a couple of years and validation of that data before working with the folks at Science-Based Targets Initiative to make the commitments and get your projects approved. And so there's a bit of a runway that you have to allow for in expecting commitments from your suppliers and the folks in your value chain. So understanding, and one of the things that I think is important for any company that wants to push down to their suppliers, achieving those kind of goals or setting those sort of commitments is that you've got to walk the walk yourself. You've got to talk the talk and walk the walk, right? You need to have done the work, you need to set your own ambitions and have a way to tie what you're expecting your suppliers to do to the goals that you've set for your own operation so that you can really lead by example. I think that goes a long way to credibility and reinforcing those relationships throughout the supply chain. But I definitely think that sort of the environmental issues are really what we're hearing from folks the most about right now.
Okay, makes sense. I don't, Mindy, you could jump in if you have anything to say on the corporate commitment side. I'm not close enough or familiar enough with Baxter's commitments, but you're pretty new there, so I don't want to put you on the spot.
So, I've kind of jumped right in. And I do... Full disclosure, spend an inordinate amount of time responding to, we're a global organization, a very large global organization. And whether or not a US-based headquartered company has the established requirements for reporting, globally we do. And Joanne hit on some of those pillars, right? I mean, our if I have a roadmap I would share with everybody, it's sustainable procurement, it's human rights and social ethics, material compliance, obviously environmental requirements and KPIs and reporting requirements. And then I brought it up earlier, it's just as important to us is the diversity aspect of it and how that extends out on a global scale to grow it. That again is another challenge, but walking the walk, I can tell you, in addition to having to respond to the global requirements on some of those pillars, it is also, we're a large organization and I am also in the process of coordinating with our team. And we're a little late, full disclosure, after only being 4 months of doing our own scorecard and within EcoVadis. And it is so helpful for me to know the experience of going through that questionnaire and what our suppliers have to face. And so when we do these extended supplier outreach occasions and events, and they bring those up in the Q&A, it is so helpful. Of course, we can get the technical response from EcoVadis and the great feedback and solutions if there are any challenges that can be addressed. But I think it's pretty impactful to hear from me within the organization. Yeah, I understand. I have had to do the same thing and be able to attest on some resources, some solutions, I share the pain. It's not a painful process. It's actually going to work out for you. And then to be able to talk intelligently on what that process is and bring up examples for when you have to do your next scorecard. It's not going to be as painful. It's a great opportunity for improvement. So that's kind of, you know, from a corporate scale on those pillars, there are a lot of requirements that I have to respond to globally and you know, regionally and domestically. It's a reality. And soon it is going to be, I think, domestically more crucial, and make sure you make it part of your process to understand that you're going to be held responsible for a lot of the reporting. So for larger organizations, we have a corporate responsibility report, which is, you know, a good resource to look at as an example. So, but yes, it's really
commitments
good
are coming. Look. Yes. Yeah. And these have visibility at the exec level is the point within the organization. Right. So is that increasingly true? Meaning, like, I don't know, not that every day, you know, your CEO is talking about the accident rate in the supply chain, but the point is carbon is on everyone's lips, right, at the top. And certainly, you know, it kind of rotates, but I mean, certainly, you know, human rights and that sort of thing, that those are topics not far from the executive office. They're watching these things, I think, is the point. And yeah, so those pressures are coming down and getting expressed in this assessment and improvement journey that you're trying to realize. And I think it's pretty universal. I mean, I don't know if I mentioned that there's, you know, 60 pharma companies using EcoVadis already. There's 60 in pharma, life sciences, biotech, and medical device, at least maybe more if you include all those categories. And, you know, the other point that you made, Joanne, about like this is like these pressures are happening at all these companies. And so collaborating together as an industry makes it a lot simpler for the suppliers. And we do have a number of industry collaborations, including one responsible health initiative is a collection of pharma and healthcare companies that are using ratings all for their suppliers. They, you know, there's some simplified tools that allow them to, when they share their scorecard, they can also get visibility across the entire, you know, initiative. So it really makes it appealing for the supplier to participate. And we also have similar initiatives in rail and chemicals and beauty and cosmetics. And one of the best practices there is to also have those companies that are running the sustainable supply chain program to also rate themselves, right? So they're getting rated by EcoVadis as well. And that walks the talk, right? So you ask somebody to do something, you can say, hey, and we've done this, by the way, here's our scorecard. And, you know, we're working on things too. And one of the big things they're working on is the sustainable procurement theme, of course, because they're, you know, a lot of those, you know, if you're at the top, like many of you in the audience probably are, in terms of your companies are at the top of that, you know, supply chain, you're the ones where everything flows to. You might have some distribution downstream, but typically, you know, you're assessing them as well. If you also have a scorecard, you also have your assessment. Yes, you have your sustainability report, like you mentioned, that's setting an example that you're being transparent about those things. You're feeling those pressures and that, you know, everyone's on the same boat, right? They all are contributing in the same value chain. They have to be part of that solution. So great stuff. I think we're getting close to the end of the discussion. There were a few questions coming through that I think are being addressed. Maybe we have one last part on kind of outcomes or key next steps, ambitions for the coming year or whatever the time period you want. I guess this is a little bit more kind of concluding. What would you say, Mindy, are your biggest goals for the program, for your sustainable procurement program going forward, short-term or long-term? What would be your kind of ideal scenario outcomes?
I think first and foremost, publicly, our disclosure, our goals are pretty aggressive, right? So on a public visibility scale, I think, you know, it is really important to me to meet the goals that we've established. You know, for example, we've said we want to integrate supplier sustainability across, you know, with our suppliers. But, you know, we have several thousand suppliers, but, you know, the first phase is across 90% of our spend. Wow. Internally, in the background, we are revisiting our current processes, our current ESG strategy. And then also and we alluded to this earlier, every supplier, no matter what the size, is important to us. So we are working internally as well on our entire supplier base to offer the resources and tools to help them improve. You know, you mentioned a trajectory, but also it's important to us to be able to identify not just the critical suppliers, but how we can help them. So yes, we have the public phasing, you know, that's an important goal. We're going to do this, but also not forget about every supplier, every size. You know, we can't accommodate them all at once, but they're still also very important to me. And so we are also using additional platforms and tools, for example, to help them and to enhance our risk mapping process to include more sustainability initiatives, the earlier pillars I recommended and talked about earlier. So that is my goal is, you know, we have this pressure from high above, but it's top down, bottoms up, and sideways in terms of our approach to meeting those goals.
That is excellent news. So that you do have a goal to cover 90% of spend. That is fantastic. And then, but not limited to just the large suppliers. You want all suppliers to get on that journey. And so you want to make sure those resources available, you know, much more democratically to all suppliers, which I think is also fantastic because, you know, that's sort of our mantra is that, you know, anyone can contribute and get on this improvement journey. So that's really great to hear. Joanne, some ambitions coming from your client base and from your customers on what types of goals they're setting, maybe percent coverage if they're in the sustainable procurement side, or maybe not just score goals, but you know, their maybe sustainable circularity or other more ambitious goals coming from your customer base.
I think that circularity is probably a big one, but in many ways that ties back to carbon emissions and driving that down. So we see lots of ambition or goals towards renewable energy, depending on where the client is based, depending on where the client's value chain is largely based, can impact sort of which is their primary focus. And it often is really tied back to what were the drivers? What is the thing that brought them to us with the question or a problem to be solved in the first place, right? So there are cases where if it's purely customer driven, they've got one customer that's really important to them that's requiring a certain score, then they're score motivated. And so it's really not about a broader ambition. It's about what do they need to do to get that score and maintain that their buying opportunity with that particular customer. But I think that as a rule, we would say that environmentally related ambitions are the priority kind of across the board. Like I said early on, I work with a lot of customers or clients in the manufacturing space. And so for them, looking for opportunities to drive down carbon emissions on principle, finding ways to tie that to a financial savings, that's really important. And that is true irrespective of a more formalized ambition like science-based targets or net zero.
Okay, fabulous. Thank you. So we're about out of time. And I see that Hannah has answered a lot of the questions and Sam that have come in. And one of them, since we're right at the end here, one of them was about, you know, how do you determine what categories to assess? This was about risk mapping. We've mentioned risk mapping, but maybe haven't described it. So if one of you want to describe kind of your take, 2-minute take on like, what does it do? We have our own product and answer for that, but I think it's a fairly standard risk mapping. It's, you know, about materiality and category country risk. So maybe one of you could describe the process that sustainability risk mapping across the supply base, just the general overview.
Sure. I'm happy to jump in first here. And then Mindy, please feel free to add in anything specific to Baxter or your experiences. This is a question that can get really, really complicated. So when I'm working with a client, particularly that's less mature, I try to drill down to really, really simple things to think about. And I think that when these things are explained throughout the procurement group, whoever that staff group of folks are who are responsible for it, it becomes a question that answers itself. So thinking about where is work being done, right? Are there particular risks associated with production happening in a certain country, either because of some sort of corruption issue in the government? Is it because of human rights issues within that country that are publicly known? Is it because the grid is filthy? You know, what are the opportunities within those spaces? And so thinking about risk in your supply chain based on those things, that can be sort of a really straight line way to understand what you might need to get stronger controls in place for. And then sort of second level to that is thinking about what are those high spend areas? What are those critical component suppliers? Because those are the ones that have the most material operational impact potential. And so those are kind of the two different ways that I think early on procurement folks should think about it. And I think that those are some very specific talking points that can be taken back to leadership, depending on where they are in terms of their support. If there isn't great corporate sponsorship for ESG initiatives, those are some really simple ways to describe the risk potential and also then the opportunity potential to get those things really well managed.
Great. I think the last thing we can touch on is somebody asked a question about, can we talk a little about the typical legal team involvement in formation of corrective action plans? And I think from our perspective, we don't see the legal team involved at all. The corrective action plans are not necessarily, so they're part of the scorecard, the improvement engagement, and that's usually done just by the buyer themselves because the tools provide all the information needed to prioritize. And if they need consultative work, we can tap a partner like ERM and Joanne's team to step in and help supplier understand better what it is they need, whether it's developing an environmental policy or a whistleblower policy or whatever it is, or you know, a reporting program on certain you know, activities, but not the legal team. So I would say the legal involvement is more. We did a study on this that, you know, one of the best approaches to kind of making the sustainability requirements more real, in addition to putting them into the sourcing process, that's probably the biggest lever. You can also include clauses in the contracts to say, you know, eventually you need to be assessed, you need to measure your performance, you need to increase your performance over time, and possibly even put a score threshold goal in there. And, you know, then it's up to the legal team and the procurement team to work together to decide, like, if a supplier isn't, you know, making the progress that you expected, you know, the only legal action is that you could discontinue work with them. But that's not necessarily something that I think would need a legal decision. It's more of a procurement decision and a relationship decision. So I would say probably not. I don't know. Maybe there are legal teams involved simply because they're doing some of the negotiation. But I would say it's not a legal issue per se. I don't know if you guys disagree with that.
I think in a lot of clients that we support, particularly in the procurement space, things like beefing up supplier code of conduct, if there's any sort of supplier contractual relationship operating plan, any of those things that in any sort of contractual way, a supplier is agreeing to some terms that are part of a purchase agreement, the legal team is involved in that. And if changes are made to those documents, whether it's to beef up programming in general or to be more in line with EcoVadis questions, in either case, if a company intends to be able to reinforce those or enforce those, I should say, with their value chain, then the legal department needs to be involved to make sure that it's in alignment with other terms and conditions. And really, you know, you need to, if you're thinking long-term, be prepared to back up any sort of punitive language that you might include in those statements or policies. So being very mindful, I think it's really important to know that the most successful outcomes come from more carrot than stick, but that is something that can be baked in partnership with the legal folks as well to make sure that purchase agreements and supplier code of conducts have better coverage.
We're out of time. Really great discussion. Thank you, Joanne. Thank you, Mindy, for your contribution. And thanks all of you in the audience for attending, and thank you to Medical Alley for coordinating and bringing this to your members. We are contactable. You'll get the recording, the slide deck with the contact information. I saw a lot of questions flying around about how do you do, you know, more details about how risk mapping works, you know, our IQ predictive risk mapping tools, and how you prioritize suppliers, the whole methodology. Any questions like that, or if you have questions for Mindy or for Joanne, our contact info is here. And again, thank you for attending, and we'll maybe catch you on the next webinar. Bye, everyone.